This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
All right, and welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams, and a very, very special guest, Miss Candy Stroud, the founder and CEO of Stroud Communications. Hey, good morning to you. Candy, it is so good to see you.
So good to see you, too. I haven't seen you since we did the Democratic Convention last summer.
You know, Candy, I often say to people, you gave me an opportunity as a very young radio talk show host, wet behind the ears, to come to Washington, D.C. with the Democratic Convention and Barack Obama. And 4 years in a row, I was able to sit with talk show hosts of prominence as a fledgling guy and talk to congressmen and senators, and you gave me that opportunity, and it culminated, you may not remember this, with the debate at the United States Supreme Court with the Affordable Care Act, and I was there.
I know. Well, that was Families USA.
Yes.
So I worked for them I did their media events for 12 years. And we always invited you because you're so good.
Well, I don't know so much about that. But yes, it was something that I'll never forget. Life changing for me. And you made that possible. It was so good to see you again in Chicago, as you're still applying that gift and that talent that you have for organizing and making sure all these things come together.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I'm glad you were there, and I'm glad we had a chance to see each other again. It didn't work out so well, but back to Jimmy Carter, I was introduced to him by this doctor who was one of his advisors, and I didn't see what he saw in Jimmy Carter. I was like, what's the big deal? You know, he's a Southern governor. He said, oh, you ought to fly down and do an article on one of his events in Atlanta. He was governor. I did. I went down there and I met him in Roseland and thought they were very nice people. But there was no John Kennedy about him. There was no Bill Clinton about him. So I was like, a governor. And I covered lots of political campaigns and on dozens and dozens of candidates. And I just didn't see anything in him that was unique. So he came to Washington for the DGA, the Governors Association Conference. And I sat down, spent an hour interviewing him. And same reaction, I didn't see him as presidential timber. And I was assigned by William Morrow to do a book on the entire campaign, like, you know, the Republican candidates, the Democratic candidates, all of them. So I went down to Plains, and I was like so blown away by what I was seeing and by the Carter family and this incredible story. I called the publisher from a payphone in Plains, and I said, listen, can we rejigger the book and just do it on the Carters? Because this is so unique. Really good story. And then I was doing stuff for NBC, local Washington. So I took a film crew down there and I interviewed everybody in the family. And, you know, you had Gloria, his sister, riding a motorcycle through Plains with her leather jacket. But you have to understand, Plains is about as long as the laptop I'm looking at. I mean, literally, it had his uncle's store on Main Street. It was an antique store, Uncle Hugh's antique store. But when you went in the back of the store, it was Uncle Hugh's worm farm, and he sold worms back there. You know, it's like, what? This is crazy. And but I had flown down to Plains, and I took my 7 or 8 year old daughter along, so she could get a sort of a taste of the campaign trail. And by some odd quirk of fate, we were separated. Our seats were separated, and she sat next to Jimmy Carter. And so he helped her with her homework, and he drew little cartoons for her. And one of the cartoons was a mountainside, a cliff, with a Model T Ford going down the cliff. He was running against Ford. And so that was in her little cahier, her book, her little notebook, which is now framed on our wall because it was done by Jimmy Carter forecasting that he was going to beat Ford. And when we got off the plane, he said, you know, Brookie, you ought to come and spend the night with Amy. And I'm a journalist, and he's inviting my daughter to come and spend the night at his house with Amy. I mean, that was, to me, was like, quite extraordinary. So she went and spent the night there, and the next day they sold lemonade at a lemonade stand, and Rosalind helped them make the lemonade, and then I picked them up and I took them roller skating, and little Amy brought her a little box along with her little two caterpillars. Had to keep coming over to make sure that the caterpillars were okay to pat them, you know.
So if you're just joining us, my guess is the renowned Miss Candy Strout, you know, she is the founder and CEO of Strout Communications, and she wrote a book called Imagine. You know, it's her so you've had this really great relationship with former President, First Lady Rosalynn Carter and Jimmy Carter. What do you want people to know that we don't already know about these humanitarians? Did you know at that point in time that they would do the things that they've done?
I was kind of struck by his intense faith. He invited me to come to his Sunday school class. And no woman had ever been invited there before. I don't think an outsider had ever been invited there before. And I was so struck by his deep faith in Christ and the depth of his understanding of the New Testament and the way he spoke to those men. He was more like a minister, but really a really sincere, authentic preacher, if you know what I mean. And that struck me as something that permeated his whole life. Obviously, his humanitarian work post-presidency, but basically his work as a governor, his work as a father, you know, everything that he did was colored by the depth of his faith. And I was also struck by the intense love between him and Rosalynn. I mean, you know, that's unusual to find in politics. And so I think they were married something like 77 years.
Yeah, 77 years.
Yeah. And that they were extremely close. She had more of a major role in his life and in his professional life than people knew. She was always instructing him behind the scenes. He called her 3 or 4 times a day. Whenever I was travel with him, he would say, hold on, I got to take this call from Rosalynn, or hold on, I've got to call Rosalynn. It was great. And I admired that.
So, Candy, hang on a second. Sandy, you got a question you want to ask?
Well, no, I mean, I think that, you know, the world saw Jimmy Carter as president, and unfortunately, many people tried to paint him in a bad light in terms of not having accomplished much as president. I think historians look at his presidency and see more accomplishments than the people who were living during his presidency. What is it about the period of his presidency you think that can be attributed to the fact that he wasn't that highly regarded during that time period?
Why did people see him in a negative light, you mean?
Yeah, Andy?
Well, I mean, let's just start with the failed rescue of the Iranian hostages and or the fact that the Iranian hostages were taken on his watch. I was the State Department correspondent for CNN at that time, so I covered, that was my story exclusively for CNN. And so I covered that from 4:30 every morning until 8 o'clock every night. And I think I always felt that that first rescue mission, Sandy, when they sent the choppers in to try to get the hostages out, they landed in the desert.
And one crashed.
Well, not only that, but if you, if you're going to do a rescue mission, and any military top secret mission is going to, the equipment is going to be gone over with a fine tooth comb, as you can imagine. There's nothing left to chance. You cannot afford to leave anything to chance, right? And so because of the lives of the hostages and the lives of the military you're sending in to get them, the fact that they did not put sand screens on the bottom of those choppers, it says to me that that was perhaps sabotage and that they didn't want him to succeed in getting those people out. And then, and so that was, you know, he was blamed for that. I would blame the military who prepared that, that mission. Secondly, I was, I remember my husband and I, because I worked these horrific hours, we were going on a trip for our, maybe it was our 10th anniversary. I don't remember. It was an anniversary and we were packed and ready to leave. And it was a big trip. It was like Singapore and Hong Kong. And I had the bag packed, ready, my passport sitting on top of the bag. And I got a call from the assignment desk saying, you can't leave because the hostages supposedly are coming home. So we ditched the whole trip. And never went on it ever again. But I showed up at State the next morning and no hostages, no hostages. And then the hostages were being, they were negotiating in Paris secretly with the Reagans, the Iranians, to hold them until Reagan came into office.
Candy, hold that thought. 855-752-4842. My guest is the one and only Candy Stroud, founder and CEO of Stroud Communications. And always, my co-host Sandy Williams is here as well. 855-752-4842. A wonderful, wonderful story about the one and only Jimmy Carter is what we're talking about.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
I was at this carnival just a few years ago. No big deal, Ferris wheel, same old stuff, you know. And I wandered around the grounds until I found this little tent. Man outside made a speech, and this is how it went.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. Text us at the same number. I am joined by the one and only founder and CEO of Stroud Communications, my good friend Candy Stroud. It's Friday. That means my co-host Sandy Williams is along as well. And you know, Candy, you've met who's who, you know, in the political world, you know, in the entertainment world. You've had an opportunity. You've lived this life of meeting, you know, the greatest amongst us and accomplished people. Jimmy Carter was made out to be a not so bright man. Uh-huh. But if I'm just saying, and people, he's a peanut farmer. But if you read his accomplishments, what are your thoughts for people who thought he wasn't a very bright man?
Well, let's start with the fact that he was a nuclear physicist.
Yes, I know people did not know that.
Nuclear physicist, and also, as we recall, he wrote 33 books.
Yes.
I think he had a fairly high IQ. But back to Sandy's question for a second, I was just thinking about, you know, what were the negative things about his presidency? And we all remember that I remember this because we bought our house during that period, and the interest rate was 14%. Yeah. You know, we're all squawking now about it. Oh, it's at 7% if you buy a house. Well, under Carter, it was huge. It was very high. Gas prices were very high. And it's always comes down to it's the economy, stupid, right? It's the James Carville mantra, it's the economy, stupid, as it was in this election, too. People having a lot of trouble making ends meet. I saw this more. We have this little local, I'm sure you have it where you live, this little local blog, I guess you would call it. And they send around local news every morning. This morning it was, a woman said she went to Wagshaw's, which is a little grocery store, I guess you would call it, a couple of blocks down. And they tried to charge her $16 for a dozen eggs. That's very expensive for eggs. So we're facing lots of inflation right now, too.
Well, yeah, so his economy was poor. But then, you know, your book obviously must spend a great deal of time talking about Carter the man and Carter the man post-presidency as well. What would be the highlights of Carter's life that we don't, you know, obviously we know him to be this great philanthropist and the things he did, but how would you like to characterize him in the next 7 minutes, you know, in terms of discussing Carter the man?
Well, he was very, he was very easy to be with. He was very down to earth, and what you saw was what you got. And I was always interested because I'm a singer. I sing with a symphonic chorus here in Washington. And coming up, we do this Martin Luther King concert every year. And we sing gospel with one of the big local black choirs here. And so it struck my attention reading about how Jimmy grew up in the fields. When he worked for his father growing up, you know, cultivating crops and picking crops, cotton and soybeans and everything, peanuts as well, with all of the black people in the community and singing gospel songs with them. And I always loved that about him because he had such a natural relationship with the black community. And that was a very, very segregated area where he lived. And as you know, I think in his first campaign, he did campaign as a segregationist, even though he wasn't one. So I was always struck by his relationship with black people and his ease with, you know, his fellow man.
You know, Candy, I never saw him frustrated. I remember reading after the helicopter crashed in the desert, he put his head on the desk in the Oval Office and wept that those few military people had died. He took that personally. It hurt him to his soul. And so he was the kind of person that was so in touch with humanity. I mean, not just the fact that he was the president, and you don't see that in many presidents. You don't see that in many people, period. Very special man.
Well, one question I had for you, Candy, that has always intrigued me. I was legal counsel to Pat Lucey, the governor of Wisconsin, and it ended up that Pat Lucey kind of contributed to the Carter defeat in 1980 because he and John Anderson formed a third party ticket, and while they didn't take too many votes, they got about 6% of the vote, I think. Lucey was part of the Kennedy wing of the Democratic Party, and it seemed to me at the time that the Kennedy wing was very much not a fan of Jimmy Carter. I never understood that. Did you understand that?
Well, Teddy ran against him, remember?
Right, right. That was at the heart of it. But then the Lucey jumping on the ticket, I mean, it seemed almost as if the Kennedys did not wish for Carter to win that election.
Well, that's right. That's why Teddy ran against him, was to dilute the vote.
Yeah.
And recently I'm friendly with quite a few members of the Kennedy family. And I asked one of them recently who I would talk to about going to the Carter funeral. And she said, "Don't you realize that we're not fans of Carter?" I have no idea.
What the heart?
Hey, Candy, thank you very much. Promise me you'll come back. Promise me you'll come back.
100%.
All right. Candy, have a great time. Look forward to talking to you again. All right. That's the one and only Candy Stroud, founder and CEO of Stroud Communications. We're going to go back to the topic we had before. We brought her on. And so, guys, light up the phone lines. We'll come right to you. It's a Friday edition of the Earl Ingram Show.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
That sounds like Prince, man.
Well, that's Prince. That's who it is.
That's Sandy why, is
that's
listening
why it sounds
to Prince.
Like him.
855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host, Sandy. Sandy, you are an enigma.
Well, I have sort of a broad taste in music.
So let me ask you your thoughts about Candy Stroud before we go to the phone line.
Well, she's a very interesting person. Obviously, she goes way back, but I've always been very intrigued. I wish we could have spent a little more time talking about the rift between the Kennedys and the Carters, because I never quite understood it, and I always thought that there was a possibility that Pat Lucey decided to run with John Anderson because there was a part of him that wanted to sink the Carter ship as well. So
Sandy, we'll get her back on with us. She'll certainly be one. I was so fortunate and blessed to early on in my radio career to have met her, and she gave me some opportunities, man, to do some things in radio on a national scale that I've always, you know, remembered, and it kind of helped me to get to where I am now. You know, when you meet a person of her stature, and she looks at you and she says, "Hey, I think there's something there," and she takes a risk, and so, like, it's, you know, she really helped me along the way. But anyway, 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. Sandy, before, you know, we change subjects, you're talking about, you know, where we are, the Gilded Age, and as Gary said, the Golden Age, whatever he was saying, and so you were talking about where we are. So we got some folk who've been, you know, who are on the phone line. You want to outline what we were talking about before we go back to the phone lines?
Well, yeah, I was struck by the fascination that the incoming president has with President McKinley, and I did some research on McKinley because I had always thought of McKinley as being at the tail end of the Gilded Age and the tail end of the time that America would not necessarily be so proud of. It was the Wild and Woolly West. It was when John D. Rockefeller and Andrew Carnegie and others were amassing great wealth through the sort of unbridled capitalism we had at the time, which so much of it was gathered with some assistance from the federal government, for instance, the railroads and the Homestead Act and that whole process. So, you know, Theodore Roosevelt was the hero that came forward to lead a progressive movement to sort of help the country work past the time when oligarchs seemed to be running the show. And it was Teddy Roosevelt that succeeded William McKinley at the time that after McKinley was assassinated. And so I thought it was ironic that the current president wants to fasten on that period, the last period of American imperialism. We started the Spanish-American War for the purpose of foreign conquest. And we have a current president who seems to be talking about the same sort of expansionism. So it didn't go well for the McKinley tradition and legacy, because people began to recognize with Teddy Roosevelt that there was a need to get their arms around and try to wrest some control back for the people. So we had the antitrust actions against Standard Oil and a basic progressive movement.
Let's go back to the phone lines. And Mike from Kenosha, good morning to you, Mike. Thank you very much for being patient. You say what?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, as always. I appreciate it. Real quick, I want to get into the Gilded Age, because that's a sweet spot of my knowledge in American history. But I do want to touch on Jimmy Carter just for a quick second, because the two things that he's probably most successful at, nobody talks about. Number one, he brought in 10 million good-paying jobs. Number two is he was a peace broker between Menachem Begin and Anwar
Sadat, right.
Yeah, so those are two things that get obscured very, very quickly, and I'd like to kind of push them up toward the front of the line during Jimmy Carter history. But the Gilded Age, thank you for getting into this era, because the synergies are absolutely rock solid here. You know, it's not wealthy people that a lot of us are concerned about. It's the obscene wealth that we are upset about. You know, I define wealth, and wealthy people are people who maybe don't have to work anymore. But if they want to, they can. Or if they, you know, just love what they do so much it's not working anymore, that's great. But when great wealth is attained by a very narrow group of people, all kinds of bad things happen. Monopoly, child labor, environmental pollution. And that's just a start. Forget about wars. Which we, the peeps, are the ones that always pay the price, not only in treasure, but in blood. So, you know, the Gilded Age and the risk of great wealth, Teddy Roosevelt got it. He adopted, you know, a very progressive, as you were saying, Sandy, position. And he went after these monopolies with a vengeance.
Mike, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to respond?
Well, that was Teddy Roosevelt's legacy, his ability to be a charismatic leader and to take on the power structure was something that was dramatic. It was a dramatic shift from those who were fawning. William McKinley was a president who fawned for the very wealthy, did their bidding, and played their game. And Teddy Roosevelt decided that that was not the path for the way to lead America and to obtain political power, which was his view, was to get it directly from the people. And so, you know, my hope is that what's going to happen tomorrow is going to be the result of what's happening today, and that people will wake up. The danger I see, I saw a piece by Ezra Klein about this, is that the people up on the dais at the current inauguration are the people who run the companies that are the influence peddling operations that are affecting social media. And they are social media. We had on the dais the owners of Google, the owners of Facebook, the owners of TikTok. I mean, they were all there. And it's those media that are having a big impact on the way people are thinking and acting today. And so, you know, I hope that there is a parallel course in history that will cause people to awaken, and we will find a leader like Teddy Roosevelt to awaken us. But, you know, there is danger in this current situation where the terribly wealthy are also the people who are in control of those who influence.
Before we go back to the phone line, Sandy, you talk, about the media of today, and that's these networks, these, you know, and at the same time,
social media. Yeah.
At the same time that those things are springing up and exploding, and that's the new media, the former media that we have grown up with, you and I, is dissipating, falling apart.
Yeah,
and that's, to me, that's the inherent danger in this.
Yeah, I mean the news media was a trusted, you know, at the time of William McKinley, we had yellow media with William Randolph Hearst. He was beating the drums. He was leading public policy. But today what we have is people finding their media based on a buffet of choices. The news media, to me, is a huge smorgasbord, and people can feast on it as they choose. And we have an increasing number of people who don't listen to the radio. They listen to podcasts. They don't watch TV news except the one that gives them the echo chamber that they're interested in having as validation. They're watching Joe Rogan on
yes.
Video on social media, and they're finding their own sources. And so that's going to make it a little bit harder, I think, for us to work our way out of this, because people are selecting the universe of reality that they're choosing to live in, and we are not living, all of us, in the same universe of reality.
So here's a prime example. We just got through talking with Candy Stroud, who, you know, whether you know it or not, whether people understand, she was trained in media. She clearly is a part of those who knew how to go about, you know, picking news stories, having dialogue and conversation, a trained person. Who is Joe Rogan? And yet people are willing to, oh, Joe Rogan. Well, okay, so who is he? Where's his training from in media? So he's a guy who's amassed a fortune. But that's what that makes him now a person that we should listen to.
Well, he's a personality. He has points
of view. Yeah, personality, right.
But the point is that people are picking and choosing the reality, because that's the way they're realizing the reality they live in, is through the media that they're choosing to perceive reality. And the problem is that the reality that's being presented to us is different depending on the media in which we choose to reside. And that's a strange phenomenon. I'm not sure we've had that in existence in the last 200 years in sort of the period of modern history.
Is it a good thing in your assessment?
Well, it can't be. No, I don't think it is, because people are not on the same page when they talk to one. They aren't on the same page of reality when they're talking to one another, which makes it almost impossible to reach concordance on anything, because their view of the facts, you know, people can pick and choose their facts and what is a fact differently than was ever done in the past. And so I think it's one of the reasons why we have trouble reaching any sort of concordance with callers, because it's not just semantics. It's not just that words mean something different. I think it's that people are living in a different reality, and each of their realities is helping them form their opinions.
All right, let's go to Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom. Thank you very much. You say what?
Good morning. I would ask any of the callers out there, honestly, I know we can't ask how much do you make a year, because that's very personal. But honestly, how much is not enough? The gentleman called up and said, the rich, the rich. You know, when five families own more wealth than 70% of the country, I would say that's too much. I would say Teddy's great cousin, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, which I think we're more in those times than we are even in the Teddy Roosevelt days, you know, raising the top income tax rate for anyone that made $3 million or more during that period of time to 90%, to raising the business tax to 50%. People could still write off a bunch of stuff, but it wasn't 13 and 15% that they were paying. And again, I will say to Ken, who brought this up earlier, Ken, I can guarantee you that your paycheck, your wealth, everything you have accumulated in Wisconsin, and this goes for myself as well, I make $200,000 a year, Ken, but I can guarantee you I am closer to the paycheck and the wealth of the homeless on the street than I am to a billionaire.
Hey, hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to?
Well, I think what time is reflecting is what I was saying, that the pain of paying taxes is far different for someone who is living paycheck to paycheck than the pain of paying a very substantial income. Because what we call purely disposable income, you know, for someone who earns millions of dollars a year, most of that money is purely disposable, money that is in excess of what they are what they require for living day to day, for paying their utility bills, etc. But that's not the case for median America. It's not even the case for the America that Tom lives in at $200,000 a year.
All right, 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. It's Friday. Means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams and you. Hang on. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
One bourbon, one scotch, and one beer.
Yep.
Welcome back.
John Lee Hooker.
To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. And that's the stuff to send Sandy Williams head.
Well, yeah, this one actually, a good friend of our family's, Charlie Kubley, a young man who I have very warm memories of. John Lee Hooker, and this song was something he played repeatedly. I've always liked it.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Ann from Chippewa Falls. Good morning to you, Ann. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
I say that the rich people have done a good job convincing the working class people that it's the immigrants' fault, why we don't have enough money in our pockets. You know, for Elon Musk to be able to say to us, things will be hard for a while before they get good. And people bought into that. And that's the part I don't understand about working class people. They all think that they want a piece of the pie and these rich people are going to let us have it. That is the biggest lie in America. The rich people care about one person, themselves, especially the three people at the top. They're just looking after their bank accounts. So working class people need to wake up and realize that we're in this together. And if eggs go up $16 a dozen, and that's okay with them, and before $4 was too expensive, and all your callers that usually call in, I haven't heard about economy. All these things that they voted on has not happened. So that's what I wanted to say. Thank you, Earl.
Hey, Ann, thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, we're in for a tough ride. And as you talked about, all of those tech people, and their wealth is really obscene. So people, you know, $200 billion can't be spent in how many lifetimes?
When you realize how many dollars you have to spend a minute to spend anything like $200 billion, you'd realize that it's impossible. You know, it's not even an unbelievable spending spree. It's an impossible spending spree.
How many Mercedes Benzes, Rolls Royces, and how many, you know, as you stated, $500 million yachts, and how many times can you travel around the world, and how many diamonds
The fact is, these people have amassed this money because they live in the circumstance they do. And the circumstance is, geopolitically, the United States of America, which affords this opportunity to amass great wealth. And what I don't understand is the resentment they have for paying taxes of a portion of this great wealth that they make as the price for living in a place like this and affording these same opportunities to other people as well. But I fear what's happening amongst the wealthy is a tendency to want to pull the ladder up behind them. They came from nothing, but they aren't identifying with nor projecting the needs of those who have nothing and for whom there needs to be the opportunity to follow in their footsteps. But meanwhile, the people who do have nothing are still vicariously congratulating these people with great money and living it vicariously. Enough so that there is no strong political movement today to take this on.
But here's where I'm frustrated. They couldn't do this without politicians who make it possible for them to be able to do what they're doing. To the politicians who pass the laws, who won't raise, you know, the percentage of what they have to pay. They're politicians who are in between that, Sandy. They're politicians who make the decisions on these things, right? We've got a politician right now who's the president of the United States who has said clearly he's going to get rid of IRS agents so they can't go after those people. I mean, that's where this lies. That's where the changes have to take place.
Well, I mean, the problem is that what we're watching today, what we've had in the past have been decades of money operating in the hallways of Washington based on political action funds and the lobbyists representing industry and trade associations, compromising the views of people by giving money to their campaigns and causing them to address issues of public policy that are not of particular importance
beneficial
to Tom, Dick,
to
and Mary,
person,
but,
right.
But now what we have is people who wanted, there is a movement today amongst people who want to get that kind of money behind them. They think that kind of money is what has led to this big government that doesn't do work for them. But they now are embracing the idea of these publicly very wealthy people like Elon Musk, suddenly are going to throw away and get rid of this dark money in the hallways, and they're going to use their bright, flashy money in front of us to want. You know, Elon Musk isn't in the hallways telling a senator, I'm going to get someone to run against you in a primary if you don't do what I tell you to do. No, he does that on television, saying,
right.
You know, I'm going to get people to run against them. And so what we have is this open and notorious corrupt conduct. And for some reason, the American people seem to give people a pass for open and notorious conduct. That's what we found out with Donald Trump. And we can't do that. We can't do that. And maybe this open, notorious conduct will ultimately get under our skins and we'll start reacting to it.
Hey, Sandy, a great, great conversation as always. Thank you. We'll see you next Tuesday. Thank everybody who made the show. Gold Calvin, thank you for a great week. Up next, Jane Madnett, Greg Bach, Madnett on there. Stay warm.
I said, hey, Mr. Bargiano, what do you want? One bourbon, one scotch, and one bill. One bourbon, one scotch, and one bill.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.